This episode is brought to you by Square. If you run a restaurant or business, Square has the tools to help you stay connected to customers, shift your business, and navigate this uniquely challenging time. Learn more at square.com/go/speakeasy.
This week on Meet and Three, we look at how we've adapted to a new normal during the pandemic. From the business of restauranteering and the new habits of composters, to learning from the past to prepare for the future, we're exploring what came before and what lies ahead.
People in charge of the collections and the acquisitions looked at me and were like, what the hell are you trying to sell me cookery for?
These kids are so young and we're teaching them that it's okay to throw out all this food, and we have to figure out a way to educate these students to make them, you know, lifelong environmentalists.
Tune in to Meet and Three wherever you get your podcasts for the latest stories in the world of food.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Hey, fellas.
Gentlemen.
How are we doing?
Here we are again. Here we are again, together but separate.
Another virtual studio.
Another COVID recording.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been saying this. It's going to be weird. It's going to be nice, but it's going to be weird to see you guys in the same room once we move out of our virtual studios and back into that delightful little shipping container behind Roberta's. I will say.
I'm looking forward to that, but frankly, you guys can kiss off. I'm looking forward to some Roberta's pizza.
I was just going to say, yeah, like the pizza at my virtual studio pales in comparison to what I'm used to.
I have three things to say. One, I agree with that, pizza. Two, I'm wondering what's going on with our bar and like if we left any like vermouth or anything that's turning in the studio bar.
Oh, I hadn't even given a thought to the studio bar. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And then three, to be honest, it's always kind of weird looking at your faces. So the longer we can keep doing this, the better for me. I'm kidding. Right. I'm kidding, guys.
That's why Damon always wears those dark, dark glasses in the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's for other reasons. That's you know, Tuesday nights are usually the nights that I would bartend with Henry O, and we'd stay up real late. So those glasses were for a hangover. But I miss seeing the folks at Roberta's a bunch.
Exactly. That's what I miss the most. Fuck the pizza. Fuck the shipping container. I miss seeing the faces and the people that we know and love that work there, and hanging out with the team from Heritage Radio, hanging out with Amanda. Amanda, you mean a lot to us.
I just say how many hosts have been saying how much they love the studio, but I don't think there's anybody who misses the studio more than us engineers.
Yeah, I don't miss the studio. I miss your faces. So I look forward to us finally getting back to being able to be social again without so much distance in there.
Amen.
Damon, indeed. What's going on out in California? How are things going?
Well, as you can hear, there's some construction going on next door from the house. So that swinging hammer is a little annoying, but you know, it's good to see. Like, I'm looking out my window and people are out doing stuff, and like, you know, so I can't be mad at that. Not great for radio, but it's also great to people are doing things in their yards, working in their houses, you know, taking on projects. And like, that to me is really cool. You know, like I've been doing it a lot myself, and we've talked with several guests on the show over the past, you know, couple months. And I always like to ask them what they've been up to, like how their normal routine has changed to what they're doing now. And, you know, it seems like a lot of people are taking on a lot of projects. A lot of my musician buddies, I always kind of give them a little bit of hell, and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, that concept album you've been talking about doing for the last 20 years. It's like, if you don't have that finished by the time things open back up, like, you're not a real musician. If you don't have like your own version of Dark Side of the Moon, you know, like, You haven't done it right. But yeah, it's in not just like in like in those ways, but you know, taking on different projects around things that need to be done around the bar or the restaurant, you know, things that needed to be done, like as far as like catching up with friends and family. There's a lot of people who've been, you know, on my radar that were just off because, you know, we were just, you know, especially in New York, just so busy. And, you know, a lot of those old friends that, you know, back from your hometown and just from your past that you may have lost touch with, you know, I've reconnected with a lot of them. I've definitely like, I have a much better relationship with my parents now because I've had the time to actually talk with them on a pretty regular basis. And yeah, so it's just like, I don't know. It's, I'm also like an optimist to a fault. So I like to see the positive and through all these things. There's a lot of crazy fucked up shit going on right now in the world. But I can see how I can see the silver lining. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And
I think like, it's important.
Like you said, Souther, before, like you said, you know, like I don't want things to get back to normal because normal wasn't that great to begin with. And, you know, it's like, I want to see what happens next, you know? And
yeah, here's our chance to overhaul it.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. How about you guys?
What's going on in New York? I would say, well, what's going on in New York is different than what I'm about to say, but what I'm about to say is, you know, I've been reconnecting with people as well. I think in the last 3 months during the crisis, the pandemic, whatever, I've been on the phone more. I've logged more hours on the telephone than I have in the last 3 years. You know, I'm not just saying like, oh, maybe I'll text my friend. I'm like, fuck it. I'm just going to call him. And then we end up talking for an hour, you know. Yeah. So a lot of that's been happening. A lot of reconnection with old friends, a lot of deeper connections with current friends. And so it's been really positive in that light, if you want to talk about positive parts. What's going on in New York? I mean, we're scheduled to, looks like we're going to do phase two on Monday. Makes me nervous. That gives us some potential for outdoor seating, limited. Not sure how we're going to do that, but we're going to try and do some outdoor seating at Amore Margo, which we way in the beginning, we had literally two tops outside, but we're going to have a bunch of tables outside.
I remember those. Yeah.
Yeah, two goofy little two tops right in front. Very European. So we're going to try and break into that, and we're gearing up to, you know, hopefully pass all the safety measures to get into phase three, which would then be to open to a limited degree. And we've talked before on the air regarding, like, I don't know how I feel about it, Damon. I don't know how you as a business owner as well feel about, like, is it going to be worth it to open at 50% capacity? Is it going to be worth it to open with outdoor seating? It's just going to be me, so it's worth it to me, I guess. But I don't know about bringing employees back on if they can't make money. I don't know about opening the doors and risking those safety issues if we can't generate revenue that's going to be meaningful. But at the same time, you know, I want to be visible and I want to fight and I want to let the neighborhood and all my, you know, guests and fans know that, you know, we're trying to make it, we're trying to survive, and we hope to be here. But it's a lot of, I don't know, I feel like the turmoil part of all this is kind of past, or at least we've gotten just used to it. And now we're just in this, like, still state of anxiety. It's mostly anxiety for me.
Agreed. What I want to know about the outdoor seating at Amore Margo is, if I go and I sit down and I get up to, like, send a text or whatever and I come back, is my chair still going to be there, or are you going to, like, seamlessly whisk them away the way you do at the bar stores?
Yeah, we're going to have outdoor seating and then we're going to remove the seats. so we're going to do outdoor standing at Amore Margo. We'll call it outstanding.
There we go.
Oh, wow.
Stayed in here first on the speakeasy, folks.
Yeah. I'm gonna post our back and forth corn pun thread just to show people our current state of mentality.
Yeah. We made a real meal out of that one.
Yeah, indeed. A lot of grist for the mill. So we do have our virtual studio happening again, where none of us are in the same room, but we're chatting on the air. And of course, we have a guest in the room. Greg, you want to bring our guest in?
Yeah, absolutely. So today we have Meredith Grelli. Speaking of grain, she's coming to us from Wiggle Whiskey in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Meredith. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Of course. Thank you so much for coming on. So you are the co-owner of Wiggle Whiskey and of Threadbare Cider. Is that correct?
Yeah, you got it.
Awesome. So how How did this come about? Because you were, you went to business school, and you and I were talking about this a little bit before the show. You had an interest in this, but you also sort of looked at the market of how distilleries were run and how whiskey was, not how it was produced necessarily, but how it was sold and how it was packaged and pitched to people. And you saw something wanting in there, and you kind of looked at it and you're like, well, I could do it better than that.
Yeah. Well, it's a family business, Swiggle Whiskey and Thread Bear. And we're from Pittsburgh, and I know you guys know, but we, Pittsburgh was the birthplace of American rye whiskey.
And hell yeah, Monongahela style rye whiskey. I'm into it.
Oh yeah.
Exactly. So we really wanted to do something in craft alcohol, and we had had a passion for craft booze for some time. And as we thought about where we wanted to sit in that space, we felt that being from Pittsburgh, we had a bit of a responsibility to try to bring back this incredible heritage of rye whiskey back to our region, which had really evaporated. So we set out to start a distillery, and this was in 2010, about a decade ago now. And when we looked at the larger liquor industry, we were certainly inspired by some of the craft distilleries that had begun even earlier than we had. And when we looked at their models, we saw this model that was really built in a traditional liquor company model. They would produce a single product as efficiently as possible and distribute it as widely as possible across the U.S. or even abroad. And when we looked at that model, we thought, well, we're never going to beat Diageo at that model. They're always going to win when it comes to sales and marketing and dollar spend. Is there a different kind of model? The other thing that really informed the way we thought about how we wanted to create a company in craft alcohol was really the level of obfuscation and consumer confusion that we felt existed in the liquor industry. We really felt that a lot of the margin, especially in the world of rye whiskey, was built on consumer confusion. So, at the time we started the distillery, Pennsylvania, which is the largest single liquor purchaser in the country and perhaps in the globe, because the state government owns all the liquor stores here. When we looked at their rye whiskey set on the shelves, we saw that the vast majority of the rye whiskey came from exactly two distilleries. And coming from Western Pennsylvania, which at the height of whiskey making here, we were producing half a barrel of whiskey for every man, woman, and child in America. And we had thousands of small distilleries and a couple dozen really large distilleries. We looked at that landscape and thought, well, we're living in the most boring whiskey landscape America has ever known. But this rye
and somewhat inadvertently, I think what you're saying is that the consumer wasn't even aware that we had this great heritage of rye whiskey in this country. And post prohibition, we shifted gears to bourbon and we sort of just kind of forgot about rye.
Yeah. And we forgot about rye as a category. And then we also forgot about the regionality in whiskey that historically has been so important to whiskey, not only in America, but in other countries as well. But certainly in America, there was Western Pennsylvania rye, which was, as you mentioned earlier, Monongahela rye. There was Virginia rye, Maryland rye. But when we entered the market, there was Indiana rye coming out of MGP. And then Beam, of course, was doing a significant amount of rye. And those two varieties were labeled under dozens of brands. And so there was this illusion of variety and consumer choice. But the reality was it was one of the most hegemonic sort of categories in America. And so we felt like we had a responsibility to bring back this regional identity. We also really wanted to bring back a taste of place to whiskey.
Yeah.
Right, well, right. Connect it to the land, be more terroir driven. That mm-hmm. completely makes sense to me. But of course, as you mentioned, like I'm, you know, maybe we're in a bubble and we love this stuff, so we're paying attention to it. But how do you translate that to information that's consumable to the consumer? Like, you know, because I feel like there's a large swath of them that frankly just don't care. Like they just want something that tastes good and is reasonably priced, and they don't really care about the rest.
You know what? I think what we found is consumers do care, but they've had really limited access to information. Even the most educated consumers about beer and wine when we started, for them, spirits were largely a black box because there weren't a lot of avenues, you know, to really learn and see about them up close. You can't home distill legally. Sure, you know, there are ways around that, but it's not like beer in that regard. And there certainly wasn't the community built up around the production of amateur spirit makers as there is around home brewers or even home winemakers. So what we set out to do was really build a distillery that was built as much for education, or what we've come to, you know, we really see it as edutainment now, but because in the spirit of people want to learn, but it's got to be fun and it's got to be accessible and it's got to meet people where they are. We can't forget that we are here to also aid in people having fun, you know?
Right. What's more fun to learn about than booze?
Right. Like
nothing. Yeah, no, I always say, you know, there's no better place to get an education than at a bar. And if that's true, then Amore Amargo is college.
Yeah, totally.
Like, I want people to learn as much as they want to learn. But the hurdle that I face, and the thing that I was trying to allude to maybe on a grander scale with you, the hurdle that I face, of course, is that lots of folks come in there with no intention of learning. They just want to enjoy. Mm-hmm. And I have mm-hmm. to suss that person out and realize, okay, this guy doesn't want to hear it. This lady doesn't want to hear it. But I have to be also, you know, hyper aware of the person who does want to hear it, who's maybe a little shy to ask about it. But then I don't want to, you know, just be an info dump on somebody's night. I want them to have a good time. But
That's such a good point. We've really tried to sort of gradate our programming around people's level of interest. So, you know, there's the consumer that really wants to do a deep dive, that wants to go super nerdy and into the science. And so we build programs for that consumer. We also build programs and events for people that are just getting their feet wet. And, you know, we certainly approach those kind of interactions pretty differently, just like you're saying.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we're kind of close to the first chunk of the show, so let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. I want to point out to the listener, Damon's not just being quiet. Apparently in California, he's lost his internet connection, so he's dropped out of the show. He may come back up. I see his name back on the screen, so he may be back for the second part of the show. But we'll be right back, continue talking about Monongahela-style rye whiskey with Meredith Grilly. Am I pronouncing that right, Meredith?
Yeah, rhymes with smelly.
All right, Meredith Grilly from Wiggle Whiskey. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Square. We all know that this is an incredibly challenging time for our friends running restaurants and small food businesses. With social distancing in place, people are staying home and eating in, and restaurants have had to pivot to pickup and delivery only. HRN would usually be recording our podcast from our studio inside Roberta's, but since they've had to close their dining room, they've ramped up their frozen pizza production, set up a wine and grocery shop, and seen their delivery orders skyrocket. Like Roberta's, many restaurants have been changing offerings day by day as they figure out how to best serve their customers. If you run a restaurant or small business, Square has the tools to help you adapt. One of these tools is the Square Online Store. It lets you set up a free online ordering page with curbside pickup and local delivery so you can keep customers safe. You can deliver orders yourself or integrate with delivery partners. Its order hub lets you manage all your incoming orders in one place, no matter which delivery partners you choose to use. Square has all the tools to help you stay connected to customers no matter where they are. See everything that's available by visiting square.com/go/speakeasy.
And we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. As we mentioned before the break, unfortunately, we did lose Damon's internet connection. So don't worry, he hasn't suddenly become super shy. But we are going to have to carry on with Adam for the second half of the show, unfortunately. But the good news, still with us here in the virtual studio, we have Meredith Grelli from Wiggle Whiskey in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And before we went to the break, you were talking about... every time you mentioned the founding of Wiggle, you use the word we. So who is the we in this equation?
Yeah, we, when we founded, was my immediate family, my husband, my parents were our full-time volunteers in their retirement. And I even we had one of my brothers roped into the day-to-day as well. But nowadays, we've become a little leggier than we were in those early days. And so pre-COVID, we had about 168 people on the Wiggle team. So it's far beyond myself or the we that I mentioned at founding.
But that's awesome. I mean, a real family affair. I love those stories in brands, you know, when it's all about the family that got together to get it done. And also I just love knowing that you and your husband are on such a same page that you could say, yeah, let's start making whiskey, and that your parents were like, yeah, let's make whiskey.
I know. Isn't that the wildest part of it? My parents, what good people.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my parents might have been like, let's drink whiskey, but they certainly wouldn't have been like, let's roll up our sleeves and make whiskey. They you know, just bring over the bottle. That's all they want.
All right.
In my notes here, it says that you're a two-time James Beard Award semifinalist. Talk to me about that. You know, I'm a former chef, so I want to know what this is all about.
I mean, you know as much about it as I do. It's so super secretive, all that James Beard stuff. We were so thrilled to be nominated and acknowledged in that way. And really, that's all I know about it. Both years I walked out of a meeting and one of our staff members told me, hey, I think you were just nominated. And that was, I mean, it sort of bowled me over.
That's awesome. Which category are we talking about?
It's alcohol producer.
Yeah.
I mean, the title is longer than that. I think it's like beer, wine, spirits producer.
Sure. I mean, that's pretty incredible, though. That's a benchmark to show that, you know, what you're making is quality. And the fact that you've been around, in the grand scheme of things, and especially in the grand scheme of whiskey things, not that long, 2011, you know, you're 9 years old. That's, there's whiskeys out there older than your whiskey company, right?
Yeah. No, it's nice to receive industry acknowledgement like that. You know, you don't, I think you guys, you know, as small business owners know that you can't look for external validation to keep going. You got to find some internal, well of resilience to keep moving forward. But it's really nice when there's some external acknowledgement of the work that's gone in.
Yeah, of course. And then Imbibe magazine rated you as one of their Imbibe 75. They do every year, beverage professionals to watch. That's pretty cool. And you've got a book, The Whiskey Rebellion and the Rebirth of Rye. And when did the book come out?
Yeah, I actually refer to that as a large pamphlet, but yeah. I think it came out a few years ago. I worked on it. I started working on it just a couple years probably after we started the company, but we wanted to get this sort of story down, both about historically what we saw with rye, and there've been many great articles written about it, and we sort of wanted to mix in the present day rebuilding of rye and the rye whiskey industry and what craft whiskey, what that meant to us, along with some of those historical tidbits. So yeah, it was a really fun project. When I think back on it now, I actually don't know how I was a lunatic apparently writing this book while we were starting this company and we had a baby, and I don't even know.
I think that's kind of everyone that I've ever talked to who has written a book has been, you know, it starts as like, oh yeah, like I already know all of this stuff. And then if you talk to them in the middle of doing it, they kind of have this sort of thousand yard
crisis.
Stare. They're like, what was I thinking? I was a fool. But also, I mean, the thing that I love about Wiggle is that you guys are so focused on the education. It's not just like a side dish for you. It's kind of your whole business model is, you know, we could take whiskey that cost us $2.50 to buy, put it in a new bottle and sell it for $40 at the liquor store. But we're gonna go that extra mile. We're gonna make sure that people learn about where this came from. And, you know, we're gonna invest in our clientele investing in us, kind of like from an educational and from a almost kind of emotional standpoint. So I'm sure a lot of that information is always at the front of your brain whenever you go into work. It's just, you know, taking your fingers and putting it into a keyboard. That's the hard part.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we had to learn such a tremendous amount when we were starting and still to this day, both about the history and the production and all of that, we went on a lot of the same journey that, you know, we try to bring consumers along now. So it's certainly a very personal sort of approach to it.
Absolutely. And I love the personal approach, but that's got to be tricky, to put it mildly, these days, because, you know, personal contact right now is a dangerous thing. So how have you adapted, you know, the not just the business model, and I'm sure the physical space had to adapt, but just kind of the zeitgeist of, you know, your brewery to a time when face-to-face contact is unwise.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So our sites are, we have 7 total sites between the two companies in Western Pennsylvania, and all the program, you know, we do on average 3 programs a day, meaning events across sites, in addition to just being public spaces. And we had been working for the past 2 years on a pretty big expansion at our main site, our distillery site, in Pittsburgh's Strip District. And we built a mini museum and a full restaurant, a new bar and a new tasting room and event space. And we opened that expanded distillery on Friday the 13th of March, which of course should have been an omen.
Wow. Yeah, no. That's
with the world's worst timing.
So ouch.
We opened up and we, you know, people weren't sort of in panic mode just yet. We had a really nice opening night, and then that weekend we saw all of our site traffic across all of our sites decline somewhere between 65% and 85%, depending on which site. And then Sunday, that opening weekend, the governor made his declaration that all bars and restaurants would close. And so we closed our doors that Sunday night. So we had this beautiful 2 days of opening and then, you know, shut it down and pretty much overnight turned that beautiful new bar and restaurant into a shipping and fulfillment center for online sales.
Wow. It didn't even get a chance to get any whiskey stains on the bar yet.
No, we have a lot of packing tape stuck to our beautiful marble tables now. Yeah.
The disappointment. And you guys do, you know, I think all spirits brands are at least community minded in some way, but it looks like you guys do a pretty tremendous amount of community outreach. Talk to us a little bit about some of those efforts that you do.
Yeah, that's community, you know, and I think community is, it just like, you know, you're saying, it's, I think it's a something we really have to think through in a pretty deep way these days. You know, who exactly is included in community and how do we make sure that we're including our whole community when we say community. But we, my background before Wiggle was in community development. And so it's just kind of baked into how we operate and think about things. We always, you know, our team always tries to get to yes to any ask. We try to find a way. We host thousands of community fundraisers at our sites. So we have some sites that are, we have a fundraiser where we give the space for free to a community organization or a nonprofit just about every night. We have built up a pretty significant local supply chain, and that starts with the grain, as you mentioned when we started. So we're the largest purchaser of organic grain in the state, but really extends through our supply chain. And then we were the first company in the state to sign on to Governor Wolf's voluntary living wage program several years ago. And so we really think about our community as our larger region, as well as, you know, from an agricultural perspective, and then our own team. And we try to do well by each of those groups, but we continue to learn. And I think one of the things that craft alcohol can do a better job of, certainly moving forward, is doing a better job of including all people from all different backgrounds that may not feel a part of the craft alcohol community right now. And that's certainly what drew us in part to start a distillery like Wiggle. We felt that American whiskey had left out a large portion of the market in their outreach and their communications, and people like myself and my husband didn't feel like they were doing much to get us to the table. And I think we have an opportunity now with Black Lives Matter, as you know, to really think more deeply about how we're getting everyone to the table that may want to be a part of what we're doing. So one of the ways we're doing that, we've spent the past year developing an apprenticeship program for our production team with guidance from the city of Pittsburgh, as well as we're working with a regional nonprofit called Partner for Work to try to continue to build out our production team in a more thoughtful way, because, you know, we expect so much of our team. We expect them to be fastidious and really pay huge attention to detail over really long hours. They're producing in the wee morning as well as late into the night every day. We also expect them to be on the leading edge of innovation in spirits. And so to be ever evolving and innovating, you really have to draw on a wide range of experiences and taste buds and knowledge. And it behooves us to get a really diverse crop of talent into our distillery. So that's our hope.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me. What does innovation look like when you're making a spirit brand? What, you know, you're kind of tied to tradition in a lot of ways, right? You want to make a Monongahela style rye, and you want to do it in a traditional way. But what is an innovation in that arena?
Yeah, so that's a great question. We think a lot about innovation, and I think, you know, one of the things we say is if a private equity firm, you know, tried to buy Wiggle, the first thing they would do is eliminate all the many inefficiencies at our place. And certainly our unwieldy portfolio is probably the first thing that would be, you know, an axe would be taken to. We produce somewhere around 36 unique spirits in our portfolio at a time. And we think about innovation from sort of three layers. We think about continuous improvement. We think about what we call fast cycle innovation, which is really internally driven. It's driven by ideas from our production team or our sales and marketing team or our customers, bartenders, bar managers, or public ideas. And those products are really intended to sort of scratch an itch and to push us and to keep us on our toes. And then we also, our third sort of tier of innovation is what we call slow cycle innovation. And that is really very consumer led. It's stuff that requires maybe some CapEx. It has a longer lead time, requires more research and development on our part. And those products. We release just one or two of those products a year, really. And so we try to keep this mix always of drawing on our region, our regional flavors and our history, but also continuing to push forward and think through what's what will be interesting in the future of spirits.
Yeah, well, your website is really an amazing read. Like, you log on and if you go to a lot of whiskey websites, you'll see like a couple different expressions maybe. Yours is like a brewery where it's like, check out these 30 different beers that we make. And it's kind of astounding, you know, because there's not to say that one is more challenging than the other to make. I would never, you know, try an apples and oranges that one. But the process of creating a distilled spirit is just by definition a lengthier one. So it's kind of surprising to see so many offerings on your website. So what steps are you taking now? You've got this big catalog. What steps are you taking now to get them into the hands of your fans in this this weird crappy time we're all dealing with right now?
Yeah, well, we are we're certainly selling online and doing curbside pickups at our place. But we're also, I heard, you know, and when you guys were chatting before the show started, you guys are reopening as well. And so are we. So we are starting our reopening this week, and we'll be bringing guests back in. And, you know, we are sort of going to see, you know, we have a really strong plan, I think, and the interactions will be quite different than what they were. But in some ways, I think guests may benefit because we're really having to rethink every step and think about how to create meaningful experiences for people in this new world. And in many cases, that means they're going to be more intimate experiences. And
Yeah. I see that. I see that for all of our space. That's what we're going to have to do we're all going to have to focus on creating. Well, which is what we already do. Damon and I talk about this all the time, on and off the air, and Greg as well. Like, we don't serve drinks; we serve experiences. Right. So now we're gonna have to change that experience to be for a smaller crowd, a more intimate group. And I think you're gonna have to do the same, especially with things like tours and stuff like that, right?
Absolutely. And not only does it need to be smaller or more intimate, it needs to be incredible. Because why on earth would you go out for a mediocre experience at this point, right? Everyone's expectations are going to be, in my mind, through the roof. I think some of our team members have thought, we're thinking about this differently. Like, people will just have to expect that it'll take longer, and we sort of had to reframe that. Like, that can't be the conversation, or why on earth will people come to us? If the experience is not phenomenal, they're taking a risk just as we are. We've got to make it worth their while. Or what are we all doing? Let's just stay home.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, it's you're not going to be enticed to put yourself in a position of, you know, potential hazard if the reward isn't pretty stellar. What right. What do you have in mind to alter your experience to meet that expectation?
Well, we are doing we're doing classes that are more hands-on and small individual, so they're more elaborate. So, for instance, this is actually at our cider company, Threadbare, but we do we've done cheese making classes in the past, and we're doing classes like that where every person gets their own whole setup. They get all their kitchen equipment. They get all of their own enzymes and dairy and all of that. And they have their own little world. And we have an instructor who's there to help them through it. But that's a very obviously involved kind of class. They get cider pairings throughout. They are doing a lot. They have a lot of their own equipment that we provide, but it provides for us a price point where we can afford to actually, you know, I heard you guys talking about, does it make sense to bring in staff? Well, we can justify having a teacher there for a group of 6 to 8 people because people will pay for that kind of experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's you know, they're not just getting, you know, the cider or the cheese or what have you at the end of the day. They're getting the experience and they're getting, you know, the knowledge of it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, are you, this seems like a huge undertaking that you had a big, you know, you had what, 7 different sites that you kind of had to bring all to a halt at the same time?
Yeah.
So what, this seems like a big undertaking. Are you, is there any like companies or whatever that you're working with to try and to make the transition back to, you know, slowly but surely revving into gear again to make that a little bit easier with like, what are you guys doing? Like contactless, anything like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Touchless transactions have been huge for us actually throughout this whole shutdown, because while we've been doing curbside, one of the things that we're able to do is a touchless transaction through our Square point of sale system that allows us, essentially, a customer would place an order on our website, they would open their car door, let us know they're here, and we would drop it in their trunk and close their door and they would drive off. And it was truly absolutely touchless. And that was because of the way our website is able to talk to our point of sale, to our system, which is through Square. It worked seamlessly and was able, we were able to provide an experience that customers had confidence in. And we saw those people come back and back because they knew they could trust us. So that's been helpful. And we'll continue with that kind of touchless experience from a transaction perspective at all of our retail locations moving forward.
It almost sounds kind of fun. Like, I mean, you know, we talk a lot on the show about how we don't really like the fetishization of like speakeasies, because it's like, why would you want to relive the glory days of like when things were illegal? But I have to admit, there is something that's kind of fun about the idea of like pulling up and someone will just like load a bunch of whiskey into your trunk and then it's like, go, 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 you know?
Totally. We were calling it Whiskey a Go-Go and we had these like cheesy signs outside. Like we were shoving whiskey in people's trunks and they would drive off. And
that's brilliant.
And someone on Instagram was like, you know, you might get in some trademark trouble.
Yeah, screw that. People got bigger fish to fry right now.
Yeah.
I love it. That's pretty funny. But I'm a little unclear on the process. So as a consumer, I log on to the website, I can place my order and pay, and then I just wheel up and you dump it in the trunk.
Exactly.
That's pretty dope.
Yeah. Well, if someone wanted to get in touch with you or maybe see about, you know, doing a little whiskey a go-go themselves, what would be a good way to get in touch?
Yeah, they can go to our website, Wiggle Whiskey, Wiggle with 1G.com, or we're on Instagram and Facebook and both at Wiggle Whiskey.
That's fantastic. Well, hey, we wanted to say thank you so much for joining us in the studio today to talk about Wiggle Whiskey and education and just what, you know, how we're all finding our own fun ways to muddle through. I hope that your really nice whiskey tasting room is back up and running as a tasting room and not as, you know, a delivery node sometime soon.
Oh, yeah. And I can't wait to come visit you guys. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate everything you're doing to rebuild your places too. We're all in this together.
Yeah, exactly. I keep saying we're all in the same storm. We're just in different boats.
It's true.
But we've got to hope that the tide will raise us all back to the level that we used to be at, and hopefully everything can move forward from there. But really nice to have you on, and thank you for talking to us candidly about what's going on with your company, Wiggle Whiskey. And look forward to seeing your face at sometime soon over a bar, hopefully. Maybe even over your brand new facility that you barely got to operate before you had to pivot. I'm sure you'd love to see that back in action as you planned for it to be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be nice. It's a good Buddhist experiment, though. Can you let go of everything?
Yeah, right? Like, seriously, everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Buddha said to let go. He never said you had to like it, right?
Yeah,
that's right.
Right.
Well, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Thanks very much for tuning in and joining us. I also want to mention real quick that it is the summer fundraising drive for Heritage Radio Network. We know that this is, a lot of people, a lot of very worthy causes have their, are in need of funds right now. But I just want to say it's been a real joy for me personally to be a part of Heritage Radio Network during this. We're producing 35 weekly shows from bedrooms and departments and jerry-rigged home studios across the country. And if you go to Heritage Radio Network right now and become a member with a donation of $60 or more, you will get limited edition Heritage Radio Network bandanas, one for you, one to give away as a friend. They look awesome. They're designed by Mover and Shaker Co. They have the all-seeing pizza eye on them, which I love. So it's definitely worth checking out on the website. But that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Thanks very much for tuning in. And until next time, cheers, everybody.
Cheers, everyone. Thanks so much.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that Sam. It's gonna get you some.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.